Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art that's a work of art in itself. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, John. How are you today? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I heard Mark say that last week.
I know. He's not as good as you, is he?
Well, he often says things I've already said.
Are you listening, Mark? Mark's not here this week, so we can afford to be mean to him. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. And you're here with me, Sally Bailiu, and artist-in-residence and cultural sounding board, John Baird. We haven't said that for a while,
no,
have we?
And I like it.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah, it is a great moniker. And, of course, we have the fabulous Brodie Guzzi on the buttons with us. Today we're going to be talking to the new creator of the curator, I should say, of the Ballarat Photo Biennale, Fiona Sweet, about that biennale, which begins a little bit later on in the year in Ballarat. We're also going to chat with John's brother Steve Baird, another artist in the family, as well as a horseman. Steve Baird is exhibiting his paintings in an exhibition called Horse Myths in Bright Space in St Kilda later on this month. I think you're going to ring him, John, aren't you? Or I'm going to ring him, one of us is.
Well, yeah, one of us is going to ring him and we'll have a chat.
That'll be great. We've also got the final edition of Arts About Summertime / Light, or something like that, with Swanee and Will, apparently being given a pink slip, I hear. I'm not sure quite what that means.
Has that not yet been defined?
Well, we always say, I think we say it differently every week.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's part of the joke. Uh-huh. What have you got for us, John, this week?
Look, I can't help myself and I'm going to go back into the world of forgery.
Forgery, great. Yeah. It's always a good subject matter, isn't it?
Well, and quite alarming these days.
Is it?
And we'll discover why.
Oh, okay, great. I look forward to that. We're also going to be playing episode 10 of Island King, an Australasian adventure. This episode's called O Tahiti. I think we've only got three more left after this, which will be a bit sad. We'll have to bring it back next summer. So while we get Steve on the phone to talk about horse myths, here's an appropriately named song from Joan Armatrading, Tall in the Saddle. Cultural sounding board and artist in residence John Baird, our regular listeners will know, comes from a very artistic family. Both of his brothers are artists too, and John often tells tales of their adventures together as children and young men. Brother Steve has an exhibition opening this month at Bright Space in Martin Place, St Kilda, and he's here. We've got him on the line with us this morning to tell us about his exhibition called Horse Myths, opening this week. Hi, Steve. He's not there. Hello, hello.
Hi, Sally.
Yeah, hi, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, look, it's a very, very faint line. I can hardly hear you.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm not sure what we can do about that.
Okay, I'll just have to tune up my ear volume.
Listen harder, Steve.
Listen harder, Steve, and we'll talk really loudly, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, Steve, why horses?
Ah, well, I've had a lifetime of horses since I met horses along at the same time I met my partner in life, Kat. So we've, apart from my art, I'm involved in the tourism business where we run horse tours in the high country. So I've lived and worked with horses for the last 40 years.
Your exhibition refers specifically to a particular horse called the Fair Maid of Perth. Who was that Fair Maid of Perth?
Well, isn't it an unusual name for a horse?
It is, actually. It's a bit of a mouthful.
Originally, I've been interested in the history and cultural sort of relics that are left lying around in landscape. And one of those stories that I've been sort of particularly interested in is the story of the disappearance of this horse. And I've pushed aside the human side of the story and just concentrated on her. She was the favourite or the preferred horse of Ernest Giles.
And he was an explorer, wasn't he?
In the 1870s, across Australia from the centre to the west coast. As part of that endeavour, they came across all sorts of misadventures. And so my interest is her narrative and her misadventures in the landscapes of the Western Desert.
Tell me, do you paint or draw in the saddle?
Sorry, Sally, try again.
Do you paint or draw in the saddle?
When I'm at, touring the deserts, I'm actually in the saddle of a four-wheel drive. But, but when I'm away in the mountains, I've always had a little notepad in my top pocket and a pencil. And I tend to draw in words more than visually in that environment because I've got to keep myself compact. But out in the desert, I carry visual diaries with me and do lots and lots of sketching with pastels and with word and pen and ink, and get all sorts of different impressions of country, whether it's little details or the grand sweeping horizons and the big skies and the colours of vegetation or the marks and scars left by nature through flood and fire. And I gather all those impressions into these travel diaries, which come back to my studio and are great prompts for putting me back and giving me a sense of place.
So have you always used them to paint?
In my adult life I have. I've got diaries that sort of date back to my young days, travelling around the east coast of Australia and sketching and writing.
Those journals, Steve.
Yeah.
Which I've had the great privilege of flipping through now and then. As you're saying, you've been keeping those journals since you were a teenager, and it's a fantastic resource, I have to say, and one that hopefully will end up in a library somewhere so everyone can have a bit of a look at them, because they really are quite extraordinary things.
I think the paintings are rather extraordinary. I'm really excited to come along to Brightspace and have a look at them, Steve. They're very, very beautiful.
I'll be certainly bringing the diaries along with me. They're a constant travelling companion, or the current one is, but I'll bring a few back copies with me. And anyone's welcome to peruse through and have another look at country from another point of view.
The paintings, Steve, have we talk in here quite regularly about the profound thread where artists borrow work from previous artists and use them. I can see bits of Sidney Nolan and his interiors speckled through the back of your paintings, and I imagine that every now and then someone would suggest that there's a bit of Fred Williams lurking about.
Yeah, well, what I particularly take from Nolan was that it struck me when I saw his Kelly series that they were essentially, although Kelly was just an iconic sort of characterisation, the landscapes supported the narrative, and the landscapes, however, were still in the background. Kelly was very much in the foreground.
Mm.
And then if you look at his river painting, those beautiful multi-panel painting of the Murray River, which is powerfully a landscape, but when you look closely, there's little touches of Kelly here peeping in here and there, out and behind the bushes that are out of the water. So there's that adjusting balance between the human, or in my case, the horse in landscape, and the landscape becoming the more important part of it. And I'm always aware of that balance. And I think in this series, the horse, the way I've represented the horse is mainly through a stencil, because it's about a real animal that existed, and there was only one ever drawing of her that I could find. And so to truly represent her, I've made a stencil from that original field sketch that was done that Giles has walked. And the horse repeats herself through the works as a stencil and in other environments. I've photobombed her, and she's been sort of digitally riding her way all over the world. But so the landscape in this case does become more and more important, and the stencil of the horse is symbolic of her being in that place.
Well, it talks a lot about the relationship of the horse, and I mean, I guess the horse has been the thing that has enabled Western man to actually go into the desert. Aboriginal people, of course, did it on foot, but we white folk tended to need the help of animals such as that. There's a great nobility in the horse, isn't there?
Yeah, it's interesting that. I've actually visited some rock art sites in the Pitjantjatjara land where during early pastoral days, there are images of stock horses painted in ochre on the sides of cave walls.
Oh, and really?
It shows that moment when the horse was introduced into their culture and was important enough to them to be represented on the walls. And for all its problems and issues and wrongness, the way the pastoral industry interacted with the Aboriginal people in those, particularly in those more outback environments, it was a very memorable time in their lives. And that part of it, the working with cattle and working with horses.
Mm. Well, Steve, it's wonderful talking to you. Horse Myths by Steve Baird opens at Bright Space on Thursday the 16th of February and runs through until the second week, I think, or the first week of March. Thank you so much for talking to us today about it, Steve Baird. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
My pleasure, Sally. Thank you.
See you soon.
See you later, Steve.
Bye. See you, John.
Coming up next, Episode 10 of Island King, an Australasian adventure.
Island King, an Australasian adventure starring Andrew Curry and Kate Jenkinson. Death in the Pacific, Episode 10, Otaheite. The tropics cast a soporific spell. All ultimately succumb to the lazy, spice-filled air. With police vigilance reduced to one old-timer snoozing below decks, the Katrina is a breeze to recapture.
I should have known Claude would have caught his very best man to guard the boat.
Where's your weapon?
I think it's upstairs.
Relax, Lionel. This is Vic Verheyen. A bastard when it comes to chess, but a friend for life.
Shall I pay for three guards, but all he got is one old beer drinker? Merci. He sent out the lugger to look for you.
Who do we do this?
I suppose I'm to be fed to the sharks.
Oh, perhaps a stroll along the jetty and a dip in the shallows, old chap. And the longer you delay telling anyone, the better, eh?
Oui, of course. Bon voyage, mon ami.
Old Claude's a good guy.
Never doubted it for a moment. But Gerard's another matter altogether. Let's get the old girl rolling.
Westerly and the current will give us 10 knots easy.
That'll put us in Tahiti in 4 days. Don't worry about the cargo, Lionel. I'm sure it's safe. We'll sort it out as soon as we get to the bottom of this business.
Sure, Skip. It's about saying arrivederci to the Kahana. She's a sweet gaff rig cutter and a bargain to boot.
Yeah, I'm sorry, mate.
Ain't your fault, Skipper. But soon enough, I'm going to be living like a Westport swell.
Pick up some short haul with Mr. Sinner and Nandy on the way. Keep the cash.
Might do, Skip. Thanks.
Hey, that, my friends, is the taste of freedom.
How's your rump, Jock?
Oh, tender enough for a New York steakhouse, I'll bet.
I believe my backside is no longer a topic of conversation. Ever.
Beautiful bloody sunrise. You cold, Gabby?
A little. Oh, I should have asked you to sail me long ago, Billy. This is so wonderful.
Nothing quite like it. But you can't eat the scenery. It's hard sometimes to appreciate the beauty when you're up to your ears in debt. Actually, that's not true at all. As long as I can stand on this deck and feel that wind in my face, I don't give two hoots for who owns what.
Me either. Look! Look! Purposes!
Hey, look, chaps. Purposes! Stay in a broad reach and keep the wind on your starboard quarter. You'll fly.
Aye, Skipper. Good luck.
See you in Australian.
Just log in at the Seaman's Mission in Melbourne. We'll find you.
Could take a while.
3 weeks if you hurry. 5 or longer if you stop in Fiji. Look after her, Lana.
Like she was my own.
Come on, old girl.
Oh, yeah, old girl, old thing. That's me.
Room 312, madame and monsieur Wallace, and this telegram is for you, monsieur.
Merci.
Thank you, darling.
Maybe just nod next time, eh?
Mrs. Wallace could be German.
Yes, but she's not, is she? Ah, excellent. Sally's reserved 2 first-class seats on tomorrow's flight. Are you sure you're good with paying for all this?
Before I married Ralph, I made him promise me 2 trips to Paris a year. This is nothing. You have a nice beer, I will go to the bank, and I will make sure they send some money to Australia and as well.
You really are turning out to be a good egg.
Now I'm an egg. See ya.
Righto. Hello there. Oh, my word.
Well, I wasn't going to clump around in Sally's old onion bag.
Right.
Don't worry, I'll put the disguise back on tomorrow. It's very nice here, Willie.
Nice view of Key Maria, and we can keep an eye on the police station.
I mean, it's nice in a sunny room on a hot afternoon in Tahiti. Makes me feel all warm and dreamy, if you know what I mean.
Well, crikey. Gabby, now please don't get angry, but I need to ask about Ralph.
Sure.
Now, you mentioned these 2 trips to Paris, and you talked about a deal with Ralph because he got you out of the GDR.
Do you think I'm a whore?
No, of course not.
Ralph is a good man, and he has been a good friend. He has been kind to me, and he has taught me so much.
But?
But I don't love him like he loves me.
I see.
But love isn't everything, is it?
No. There's loyalty and gratitude and living day to day and a million and one other things to fill up married life. And a vow to honour and cherish.
But I'm so unhappy.
Yeah, well, happiness isn't everything either.
But you make me happy, Willy.
Really?
Ever since I first saw you.
I like you too, Gabby. A lot.
Give me a kiss, Willy.
Oh, crikey.
Willy?
Mm-hmm?
I think we should not waste a lovely hotel room on a hot Tahiti afternoon.
Gosh, golly, and holy smoke. Has Will King finally stepped across the bounds of decency? Be sure to tune into the next exciting episode of Island King!
Island King is written by Peter Swan and starred Andrew Curry, Kate Jenkinson, Doug Tremlett and Nick Farnell, with Sally Bellew and Peter Swan in supporting roles. Sound production by Steve Myers. Tune in each day to Drive at 5:05 for the next exciting episode!
Coming up, a light slash summertime. I don't know. It's Will and Swanee at it again.
Good morning, Swanee.
Good morning, Will.
Welcome back to our listeners to the ARC.
To the ARC.
The Arts About Resource Centre for another edition of Arts About Light slash Summertime.
Summertime. I could never get that title right.
No one can.
Exciting days, Will. This show's really getting some legs. Look, we've got 2 letters in the pigeonhole.
I'm
very excited. At least 2 people have
been to the pigeonhole. This one, of course.
Yep.
It's actually, it's not really a fan letter. This is someone pointing out that we've been here for a month in the ARC. We haven't got past the A's.
No.
In our research, in the alphabet. And if we're looking for Anne Rand, as we were, perhaps we would have found her if we'd looked in the R section, not
yes,
the A section.
Yes, no, Tani did mention that. We'd be looking a long time for an R in the A's.
We're not looking in the right place, and we're not listening, obviously, to
no.
Tani.
Well, that's enough. This letter's addressed to Dumb and Dumberer. Yeah, so, yes, you know, there's a hint. But we've got another one here. It's on a hunk of pink paper.
That's not a letter anyway. It's just a piece of pink paper. What do you have a pink paper for?
Wait a sec.
What's that one?
Well, you're not going to like this. It's Surplus to Needs. And it's signed Brendan the Station.
It's got Brendan
station
at the bottom. It's got our names at the top.
Yeah. It's all this.
What's the story there?
Surplus to Needs. Oh, we were only contracted to do the show until the end of January.
It's got the dates into the end of January. Yeah. What's the date today? It's not the end of January.
I didn't know we were on a dual contract.
It's actually early February, isn't it?
Oh, that is. I thought we were going really well, but.
Does that mean we're getting the boot out of the ARC?
We're getting the wind-up.
Well, that's a little bit disappointing. What do we have to do here?
This is the problem. Everything is so...
It's all paperwork.
Yeah,
paperwork.
Legal beagles in the head office around there at RPP. We've got to sign it.
All right.
Yeah, I haven't got a pen.
There you go.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful,
lovely pen.
I know it is. I got that at the Fraser Suites in Perth.
It's a beautiful pen. Lovely balanced pen.
Yeah, well, pens were once a big thing, Will.
I'll sign on there.
Yeah, it was the classic status symbol, wasn't it? I mean, what's the best pen in the world? I'm trying to think.
It's a Mont Blanc, I think.
No, it's Oz. No, Parker's a good
Parker
one.
Parker pen.
Yeah. And of course, when we were kids,
yeah,
you know, back in the Stone Age, and when you had to learn proper handwriting with a fountain pen,
yep,
we had either the Osmoroid.
I remember Osmoroid. But did you write italic or cursive?
You got those if you sat on
different
cold
nibs.
Concrete. I didn't have different nibs.
We had two different nibs, depending on how you were writing.
Oh, we couldn't afford two nibs in Box Hill, mate.
Oh, of course, Box Hill. I forgot about Box Hill. Yeah, you'd get bashed up in Box Hill if you had two nibs.
Yeah, but do you... Well, that's true. Box Hill's a very tough place. You should have seen those skinheads around the station. But do you remember the Osmoroid pens with the beautiful swirling colours on them?
Oh, I do, yeah. Swirling plastic colours.
Yeah. I had a Platignum.
Yeah.
And my mum got my name embossed on it from the local Mr. Minute Fixer Shoe guy. So I was very excited. But there isn't that, there's that other one though.
It's a
Parker.
Blanc, I'm sure.
Parker, Platignum. No.
Look it up on the, go on the microfiche because it'll be up there somewhere.
Yeah, yep.
Pens.
Yeah, what pen do you have, Will? What sort of pen have you got? I'm just going to, wait a sec. How does this, Tani?
Yeah, no, she'll get you going. Yeah, that's it. I've put the thing in.
Oh, yeah. Now look at that beautiful amber.
There you go, straight up.
Look, they flick past so fast, don't they? What's that? Now, we're not stupid. We're going to look under
P for pens.
Yeah.
Well, look, I tell you what, you probably haven't seen one of these before.
Wow.
This is the Fisher Space Pen.
Look at that. It's also got the...
open that up.
It's got the Apollo kind of whatever guys on the moon.
It is. Well, open that up.
Yeah.
You know that this pen, the Fisher Space Pen,
which
comes in its own little case, was developed by NASA for the American astronauts. So, and it's a pen that can write on any surface, at any temperature, weightless conditions, whatever. It's a beautiful little thing.
I've heard about the great urban story about this.
It cost about $40 million to develop in the NASA program.
Yeah, I'm going to have it.
And was successfully used in space. The interesting thing, of course, Swan, is when the American astronauts and the Russian cosmonauts finally met each other in the International Space Station, and they opened the door, and the Americans, of course, they were comparing all the gear that they had and the suits that they wore.
And they would have been very proud of their $20 million pen.
They did. They said... So, buddy, we've got these pens. We can write on anything up here in space. Buddy, what do you guys have, you know, in Russia? And the Russian cosmonaut just looked at him and pulled out a 6B pencil from behind his ear and said, we have these.
Well, of course he did.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it have been an HB like we always...
Oh, no, not in space.
Too dry, is it?
No. HB, way too hard. You know, in space, you're weightless, Swan.
Yeah.
You should know that.
Yeah.
And if you have to push too hard on the pencil, of course, when you push, you go the other way.
So you need the cushioning effect.
Yeah, nice soft lead.
I like this.
So
it really
HB.
Does say what you, how the Fisher Space Pen helped astronauts, Armstrong and Aldrin, return safely from the moon. There's a whole story there.
Yeah, no, it's
that's
all
a
there.
Whole a new addition if we weren't getting the boot.
Yeah, well, that's what I use. And you've got this old Platignum.
But that's not that's from the Fraser Suites in Perth.
Oh, of course.
That's my pen.
Yeah.
Honestly and truly, I am holding a Fisher Space Pen. It looks like a torpedo. It's just bloody beautiful. I'm not sure I believe all that stuff, though. There is one other pen. Here we are. I told you. Mont Blanc.
I've told you it was a Mont Blanc. I've said it several times.
No, you didn't. You said Platignum, Osmoroid, or whatever.
You never listened to Tani either. She told us we had to get out of here last week, and I don't think we listened to her.
Yeah, well, we were under the Mont Blanc, or as I've got, I don't have a Mont Blanc, because that's for rich guys like Donald Trump. I have a Mount Blanc.
Yeah, that's the one you got in Box Hill, isn't it? The Mount Blanc.
Yeah, the Mount Blanc.
Good.
Yeah, I've climbed Mount Blanc. I'm up there right now.
And I don't think Donald Trump can even write, so I don't know what he'd do. Would he have pen flunkies around handing him pens all the time?
Well, I've heard he's got a presidential nerd pack. Do you know what a nerd pack is?
No, I don't.
You know the little plastic sleeve you put in the top of your business shirt so the ink doesn't run?
Oh, he'd need one of those.
Yeah.
Because he's not super smart, I don't think.
What was I saying about... I can't remember what we were talking about. The Mont Blanc.
Well, we were talking about status symbols, I suppose, yeah, and yeah. Pens. And when, in fact, what we probably should address is the fact that we've basically been given the boot. We've been here for a month.
Yeah, it's a little sad. I'm not happy about that.
We were under contract to do the summertime show.
Yeah.
Arts About Light. It's expired. We haven't got past the A's.
I don't understand, but what about this whole facility here?
Well, it turns out we're not the only people that have the archive here. You know, that business show, Business as Usual, with Jackie Mitchell?
Not Business as Usual. It's called Taking Care of Business.
Taking Care of... Well, I just think with Jack, she's so smooth. She's just business as usual with everything.
Yeah, well, that's why Tani, she's not...
What's that spooky show?
The spooky show, Soul to Soul.
Soul to Soul,
with our good friends Steve and Patricia.
Yeah, and well, they've got their archive in here as well.
It's like, it sounds like a Jewish comedy act, doesn't it? Soul to Soul.
Hey, Soul.
Yeah. Hey, what am I? What am I? A mystic?
Yeah. Well, I mean, all laughs aside.
That's true. Hey, look, I'm trying to... It is a little sad. I tell you what, for $20 million, it's very hard to get back in its case.
Yeah, no, they're very hard, the Fisher Space pens.
I don't understand. Is that thing...
No, put that back on.
Yeah, all right.
We're going to have to shut the microfiche down.
And leave all... Leave.
And we're going to have to sign off, I'm afraid. Oh. And hopefully, we might get back next summer if we get the same contract again.
I'm going to do a little dig against Brendan. Send in a couple of fan letters and we might get to stay on the air.
Yeah, people, let us know.
Yeah, quick.
If you want Will and Swanee to stay on the air, send those letters in.
That's right.
You can get the address from the RPP website. Send us some fan letters. Tell us if you want us to stay. We'd love to stay. But otherwise, the pink slip says we've got to go.
Well, farewell.
So farewell. And we'll go back to you in the studio. Thanks for the time you've spent in here with me, Swan.
Yeah, Norris, can I keep it?
Yeah, the pen's yours.
And now it's time for John On.
Lovely stuff from Will and Swan.
Aren't they hilarious?
Yeah.
I do hope people do write in. It would be great to have them on more regularly, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that should keep going.
What have you got? Forgery again? Yes, more art forgery. Well,
there is a problem growing in the massive swing tag art world.
Yeah.
Which is that they've developed a various means of testing paintings with machinery. And they can tell down to an atomic level what kind of pigments are in things and what kind of paint's been used to make things. And they're discovering at an alarming rate that paintings that have always been known to be valid paintings with perfect provenance are in fact not.
Are they?
So they can tell that a painting that, like a Raphael, apparently made in 1420... has been found to have been made in 1780.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, are we sure that the methods of dating are actually
Well, they're getting accurate? Very, very, very accurate. They haven't been accurate in the past, but they are getting very accurate.
Right.
And it's to do with, not like carbon dating, it's to do with chemicals used in paints and the history of paint making.
Yes, of course.
And the location of those paints within a particular painting. So if it's in the back of the painting or if it's mixed all the way through it, then it's an indication that the painting is not what it's purporting to be. So in the past, what would happen is an expert would stare at it until he'd figured out what he thought. And a judgment would be made on that. And that was enough, and it was enough for most of us, you know. We'd have the Rembrandt in the Melbourne Gallery, and the experts in Holland had said, yes, it's a Rembrandt, and we're all happy to have a Rembrandt and all happy to look at it.
And why wouldn't it be a Rembrandt?
And see it as a Rembrandt, you know. And but the matter hasn't been left alone there, and all of these paintings are being tested. And it does ultimately matter to the money. So there was a that Raphael, which is in fact sold at Sotheby's, very, very rare painting and very valuable.
Sotheby's in New York, I assume. Yeah.
Found to be a forgery. The buyers have sued Sotheby's,
mm-hmm.
suggesting that they're... Sotheby's, you would think, would be saying, buyer beware.
Yes.
Apparently that doesn't work anymore.
Doesn't it?
No, you can't say that. So they've been sued, and they're suing backwards. They're saying to the people who provided the painting for sale that they provided a forgery, and they're suing backwards as well. It goes all the way back down the line, and it's a terrible business. But the amounts of money are so huge.
Do you know what the amounts of money are on that particular painting?
Well, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was still... So, we don't know who then created it in 1720 or whenever you said it was.
No, but it's an early forgery and a very good one, and probably made to satisfy someone who had a house.
Had a castle wall that needed a nice picture on it.
A Raphael, someone wanted a Raphael, so someone else made one for them.
I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it? The level of sophistication, clearly, even at that time, that was used. It's obviously been a parallel business forever and ever and ever. Forgery.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. Yeah. I mean, the best way to avoid it, of course, is to buy a painting off someone you can talk to.
Yeah. Yes, like your good self, John.
Indeed.
Yes, modern contemporary arts are probably the only place that you can honestly be...
Yeah, although... If you've got vast sums of money to spend and you're looking for something from a living artist, you're probably limited to Jeff Koons or Gerhard Richter, neither of whom I'm particularly interested in. Although Richter's okay. He'd be hard to forge.
Yeah.
But you could do it.
They're big, his, aren't they?
They're big, yeah. They're ever seen a film of one being made?
No.
But they have a massive canvas, big linen, stretched linen, on a wall, and he's got assistants, and they all sort of manhandle a large squeegee.
Yeah.
And he puts the paint on the squeegee out of the tube, directly out of the tube onto the squeegee in various parts of the blade, and then they drag it across the bit of linen. That's about it. There you go. $35 million.
Thanks. It's such big business, isn't it? It's absolutely extraordinary. I can't get over how sophisticated that has become. I've just read a little book, and I'm not going to remember who wrote it, but it was a novel about a contemporary art forger and the lengths that he went to over the course of his life to forge work, and it was just staggering.
It's not always about the money, I suppose. Sometimes it's about people wanting to indicate to other people that they're capable of doing it, or that the art world has somehow overlooked them. So there can be a sort of a bitterness attached to them as well. My brother Andrew was very good at making Miros at one stage, and not that he ever suggested they were Miros. In fact, he used to sign them not Miros.
Just to keep himself nice.
Not bad at a Turner either, actually.
Oh, goodness me, you beds. I tell you what. Thank you for that, John. Now, there's been a lot of art happening in Ballarat these days, drawing new crowds of visitors to the area for a new look at an old gold rush town. The Archibald Prize was there in 2015 and 2016, and White Knight's going to be staged there this year. But it was the Photo Biennale that began things there in 2009, and it's now in its 12th year or 7th incarnation, and it probably began that tide turning. The Ballarat Photo Biennale is to be presented here again this year, and new director of the festival, Fiona Sweet, joins us this morning to tempt you up there to Ballarat later on in the year to see the world-class photographic event for yourself. Good morning, Fiona Sweet. Exciting times in Ballarat, I hear.
Yes, very, very exciting, Sally. I'm thrilled that there's so many events this year, including White Knight and, of course, our Ballarat International Photo Biennale in August.
You've taken the helm position this year.
Yes. So I was appointed as the director last June, and I've been working pretty much 7 days a week to develop this exciting program for this year's, the 7th Biennale.
For some of our listeners, the year before last, we talked to the previous director, Jeff Morfoot, but not a lot of our, some of our listeners won't have heard that. Can you describe first up what's happening up there? What is the Photo Biennale?
So the Photo Biennale is Firstly, it's the only photo biennale in Australia, and it's based here in Ballarat in the beautiful historic gold mining town just an hour and a half drive west of Melbourne. It's a biennale that heralds and reveals some of the best photography from around the world and indeed Australia. It's an international biennale and it's based in Ballarat to respond to the many photographers both in Ballarat and the region, mm-hmm. and also to invite tourists, both Australian and international, to come to a very small town and engage in a very small community where we take over the town.
Now, it is a very small town, but it's a very grand town at the same time, isn't it?
Yes, it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, if you've ever seen Dr. Blake's Murder Mystery or any of the major TV shows, they shoot in Ballarat. It was all built on gold mining money, so that the architecture is very, very grand. It's a very walkable city. It has a beautiful raft of cafes, restaurants, beautiful galleries. The Art Gallery of Ballarat is one of the most beautiful galleries, I think.
It absolutely is. It's really fabulous. But, you know, Ballarat's had its fair share of trouble, of course. It, you know, beginning as a sort of a mecca of industry and wealth with the gold mining rush, these days its national relevance is very different and it's, become demographically and economically challenged. This surge of new wave of art that we're seeing there, is this an initiative in a way by the council to address some of those issues, or is this new artistic life actually coming out of the hardship that has sort of resulted from this economic downturn, I suppose?
Well, as a new Ballaratian, I'm not exactly sure of the actual background of why there's been a surge in art-related activities. The council is certainly very, very supportive of arts organisations. They're one of our major supporters, the City of Ballarat, and they also drive through their arts department, the Archibalds and White Knight.
And White Knight this year too, yes, absolutely.
But there's a wonderful groundswell of artists within Ballarat that are very keen to support and exhibit in Ballarat. So I think people are talking about the last 10 years being quite a big change to the art fraternity in Ballarat. How that impacts economically, we've done a small economic impact statement ourselves at the Ballarat Photo Biennale to look at how, in fact, art festivals impact on small communities. And it's been proven Australia-wide when you look at Tasmania, of course. You look
Bendigo, Tasmania is a great example.
You look at Newcastle. That arts-led recoveries can, in fact, improve economic impact in a town. So we're looking at that quite a lot with our programming. So we've got significant artists coming from overseas and also from Australia, but we're also doing some strong community engagement programs with various sectors in the community this year. So it's a first for our biennale.
So it's not just looking at photographs.
Still within the photographic medium, but what we're doing is, for example, PINARC Disability Services. We're matching them up with some local photographers so that they can do projects, and their students can learn how to photograph. We're working with Federation Uni here in Ballarat, and their art school students are working with the football club with the juniors, and they're going to do a photo essay about the junior football players. Jill Orr from the Federation Uni Art School is doing a project with the drama students.
Fabulous.
So we're doing these sort of matching up with the community. We're doing some education programs. We've got a very large Indigenous photographic exhibition at the beautiful Mining Exchange. I don't know if you've been there, Sally.
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, my God, it's gorgeous.
Is it?
It's a big cavernous original mining exchange where the gold miners used to come and exchange their gold for cash.
Wow.
And that's one of our venues. And we're having...
What is it used for now, or is it a museum space?
It's a venue space that the council owns and that they give to us every 2 years for our exhibition.
I beg your pardon, sorry. How many people are you expecting to bring into Ballarat for this?
So over the years, we've actually brought 150,000 people to the town with an estimated economic impact of $8 million. This biennale, because I've got a major photographic artist coming from America.
Is this a surprise that we're not allowed to announce yet?
It's a surprise till April.
Okay.
I'd love to announce it, but
we can't do that.
I'm just waiting for my website to go live with ticketing so I can announce him. He's a very, very famous photographer. He started his career with Andy Warhol. Maybe some of your audiences might like to guess.
Mm-hmm.
He started his career with Andy Warhol in Interview magazine and has grown and grown since then. And he's never exhibited in Australia before. And we have an exclusive in Ballarat.
That's very exciting.
It is indeed. I wish I could tell everyone. But okay. That's expected to draw a much larger crowd than we have before. We're looking at between 30 and 40,000 people over the 31-day Biennale.
That's really, really remarkable, the touristic impact that must have, the economic flow that must have is seriously significant. I just don't understand why arts are not recognised so much for the draw that they have. It's clearly, that's a lot of money we're talking.
There is a lot of money, and I suppose with that in mind, what we're aiming to do with this festival and continue to grow is to ensure that our artists are paid appropriate fees as well, because often in the art world, there's a lot of love in the art world and people will do things for very little money, but when you have this kind of an economic impact, we want to make sure that our artists are also being rewarded for the economic impact for Ballarat.
Of course we are. We talk so much about the kind of fees that sports people are given because of the huge crowds that they draw and so on, their pulling power. Absolutely the same should be applying to artists. And it so often isn't.
Sure.
Now, as you mentioned just briefly before, your website's about to go live, so it's not quite there yet, but I imagine it will be in the next couple of weeks. Is that correct?
Yes, we're just testing it today, actually. So it has got just a holding page where you can subscribe so that if you want to be updated of when the artists are revealed and when you can start buying your tickets and booking your accommodation in Ballarat, and that's ballaratphoto, FOTO.org. And in about a week, we won't be revealing the entire program, but what we will be doing is announcing the $15,000 cash first prize for the Martin Cantor Portrait Prize, which is inaugural this year, which we're very, very excited and very thrilled that the Dara Foundation has supported.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be an open entry to all photographers. And we're also opening up next week for the fringe exhibitors to apply.
Oh, that's very exciting. Well, I'll make a link for this on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Fiona Sweet. I think we should perhaps be talking to you a little bit later on as we get closer to it. The 2017 Ballarat International Photo Biennale, BIFB 2017, is going to open up in Ballarat this year from in August through to September for a month-long celebration of international and Australian photography. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Director Fiona Sweet.
Thank you so much, Sally.
Great. See you soon. Obviously, that's time for the news.
It is.
High-risk dressing and critical fashions on at RMIT Design Hub in the RMIT Building 100 from the 17th of February, that's a couple of days ago, through to the 18th of March. I'm going to be talking to one of those curators of that exhibition next week.
Nice to hear all that stuff happening up in Ballarat.
Yeah,
can I tell
absolutely.
You something about Ballarat?
Yeah, go on.
I have the Federation University up there.
Yeah.
And one of the offshoots of that is that there's a lot of students walking around town with FU written on their T-shirts.
I bet they love that. Hey, Dreamhouse Theatre Company is presenting another production of A Woman's Place as part of an International Women's Day week in celebration of women living on the Mornington Peninsula. You can go to their website. I'll make a link for it. It's a bit too hard to say. And I'm going to be talking to either Cara Pacciullo or Anthea McKenzie about that next week.
The MPRG, the 24th of April to the 30th, they've got Texter Queen. Between You and Me, a survey exhibition of compelling portraits that explore gender, race and identity through the medium of fibre tip pens.
Yeah.
And why don't we all get down there and just see how compelling they are?
Yeah, that's absolutely, let's do that. Moth's also presenting an event to open the festival, the Women's Day, the Women's International Women's Day Festival with their offering that on Friday the 3rd at Southern Peninsula Arts Centre. It's music featuring Ella Hooper, Greta Ray, Leah Senior, and many more. Go to Music on the Hill for details.
Christina Bianco's is on at the Diva Moments at the Alex Theatre in St Kilda, March. Her Sydney performances at the Hay Theatre sold out in 36 hours. So Melburnians, get onto it.
Yeah. Coming up at McClelland is a new exhibition coming up soon called Dormitorium. I think we better be talking about that later. Brody's giving me the wind-up. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. You can catch up the show via podcast, which may appear on the station website sometime in the future. Show's repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the website, RPP website. Join us again, 11 o'clock Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know what we like. We just don't know whether it's real or not.
No, or it's forged.
Yeah.